Hello and welcome back, everyone, and welcome back, me. It's your host, original host, I guess, Tyler Bishop. We've had some of our co-hosts and some of our fill-ins on the show here recently, and I got to say, producer Manu, who's with me as always, I can't say that it makes me want to just spend more time in the studio because I've become a listener of our show whenever I'm not available to be on, and it's been great. You guys have been doing an awesome job. I find that it's actually a podcast that, like, when I see the new episodes show up, I throw it on. I listen to the whole thing.
Awesome. That's great to hear. I mean, look, it's big shout outs to Terrence, to Zach, Piper, and Connor, everyone who's been on the show. It's not just me. I'm usually just kind of like the voice in the background from beyond, just kind of like helping guide the stories.
Sure.
But it's really them carrying the majority of the weight of the show.
Yeah, they've done a great job. And, you know, it's fun whenever I get a chance to do the show with them on as guests. And you've sort of got the hardest job, which is steering everybody in the right directions. And you do a great job with it because it's so fun. I feel like whenever they have conversations and whenever I get a chance to have conversations with them, or we get into the topics of the day, they happen to just be the exact things that I'm the most interested in at whatever current time. I think it's relevant that we do a weekly show. So, I won't make the listeners subject to too much of our flattery of our own show. But if you're not going to be a fan of the content that you make, who will be? So with that being said, let's get into the news of the day here in the world of publishing. And so, producer Manny, we've got AI news up first. What's going on in the world of AI?
Yeah, we're going to get started with AI because we have a big competition that's sprouting up between big AI tech companies and small AI tech companies. And a critical debate unfolds between both of them, especially on their approaches. Shaping the future of artificial intelligence on one side, big AI championed by giants like OpenAI, inspires to create vast digital minds aiming for artificial general intelligence. And on the other hand, small AI advocates for a multitude of specialized models promising efficiency and precision in specific domains. This division reflects broader industry trends towards either scaling up for mass appeal or honing into customization and personalization. The discussion isn't just technical, though. It's also about power, security, and the role in regulation.
Yeah.
And as tech giants potentially monopolize big AI, small AI presents a democratized vision, albeit with its own risks. So one of the things I wanted to bring up is, what's your take on this? I know that OpenAI was a big topic of conversation a few weeks ago, especially with Terrence and Connor, where they were bringing up how Copilot and Bard are slowly but surely catching up to where OpenAI is. And then just taking a look at, like, maybe some smaller models, because I use models specifically for video editing.
Yeah.
And those work really great. But I'm not going to be using OpenAI to try to feed into, like, specific tasks.
Yeah.
So what's your take and where do you think the industry is going
to
go?
They do have the build your own GPT thing. And that does seem to focus it a little bit more. The way that a lot of people seem to think that they have compartmentalized ChatGPT to make it scale is that they sort of break out all the different, like, sort of like categories of models that are within the larger GPT. And what you're essentially doing with the build a GPT is you're getting the full sort of like package of each category. So it's identifying, like, okay, so they want this GPT to write code, so let's go ahead and get all of the code model loaded up for that one, as opposed to, like, maybe you only get a subset or something like that in the general. So I think that there's a component of that, that regardless of whether you're looking at a scenario in which the future includes a lot of smaller niche AIs that you would use for all kinds of different purposes and different things like that, what they would call, like, agents. Or if it's something where it's like you have these big tech companies that sort of, like, you know, you've got a, I think the Microsoft vision is you have a Copilot for everything. And is it going to be, you know, sort of that direction? And, you know, the longer that time has gone on and I've been around tech people and I've seen the way that the industry sort of talks about these sort of things is black and white. The answer is it's not going to be either. And the reason I say that is, even if you were to say, like, you know, will Google replace newspapers? and you would ask that question 20 years ago, it's the wrong question. It's like Google will dominate search engines because the public uses search engines. And, you know, you think about something like Office software, Microsoft dominates that. But because there's a utility around everybody using the same thing, if everybody used something different, it doesn't really work together too well. If everybody in the office used their choice of Office, you know, word processor, it'd be a huge pain. So big tech has a tendency to dominate things that are sort of like, I guess, synergistic if everybody uses the same one. But when it comes to just about everything else, it's like, think about all the other things that Google and Microsoft make that are like you never would touch. You know what I mean? Pretty much all their other products that are not in their top like three lines of business. And so I would imagine that AI will be no different, to where there'll be some general models, whether they're business applications or sort of like public best of breed scenarios, whether it's a chatbot or whatever, that largely dominate sort of like public use or business use. But I do think that the smaller models, we're going to find that there will be so many areas for them to succeed, and big tech won't dominate one in particular.
I definitely agree with that. I want to just kind of like chime in on the concept of that synchrony between the products. And like you mentioned with Copilot, you know, not everyone's going to use all of their products or their suite. But if you have Copilot included in everything, that kind of kills a step for me having to go to OpenAI and then bring that back into like Microsoft Word or Outlook if it's already just built in. So maybe that ease of use will be more of a kind of like a pathway for people to take, where they're like, well, I could pay the $20 for the OpenAI upgraded plan, or I can just use Bard or Copilot, which is already integrated into the product that I'm using.
Yeah. And I think that'll come down to sort of like, you know, you think about it. Most people, I think, at some point, depending on what kind of mobile phone you have, if you've lived a long enough life, you probably haven't had an Apple phone your whole life. And I say that because the iPhone didn't exist for a long time. So even if you've been iPhone since day one, you've probably been in another ecosystem. If not, there's a good chance that you've had a Samsung or something like that at some point. So as consumers, we do switch ecosystems from time to time, but you tend to stay in that sort of like general path in the same way that companies do. When I was at Microsoft, in my personal life, I used tons of Microsoft stuff. Like that was pretty much my home was all built around sort of Microsoft things. Some people won't have that sort of carry over into their personal life. For me, it was sort of like a requisite. But this, after I left, I slowly but surely I migrated to where it's like, even at the office now, I've integrated pretty much most of our team. They're using Apple products and Apple based software. So I think that there's going to be sort of that sort of alignment, where, especially when hardware is involved, and that's the huge advantage that someone like an Apple or a Microsoft has over someone like an OpenAI, is OpenAI kind of gets cut off at the pass. And we've seen this in the past with big tech. It's why Apple Microsoft has passed them here recently, but Apple for the longest time was the most valuable company in the world, and the most valuable of all of them. And partially it's because they sat in position to where it's like, for user data and sort of like user influence. So like, if you didn't want your users to use Facebook, or you wanted to like maybe slow Google's growth down or impact with a customer or a footprint, you know, you can step in front of them. So the way that Amazon does it is everybody runs on Amazon servers or AWS. You know, they really dominate e-commerce. Apple does it though in pretty much the last stop, which is they live in the device level. So everybody has to play by the device's rules. Google has their search engine, you know, and so everybody has to play by those rules when searching. Facebook is in the worst position in a lot of ways. And Apple, once again, it's like, you know, any commerce that takes place, you know, from an app in the app store, they get a cut. So Apple's really still in a pretty hot position. If you think about being OpenAI, if everybody else decides to sort of like conglomerate sort of a resistance to their models and stuff like that, people will have to find a workaround. And if all things considered, things are equal, I could see that being like a dent in what they do. Microsoft being a partner is certainly helpful though.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. And then sticking with some OpenAI news, we have a couple of updates for ChatGPT and OpenAI in general that are coming up. So ChatGPT is set to become even more user-friendly with the introduction of a new memory feature. This cutting-edge addition will allow the chatbot to remember details about users and their preferences, paving the way for a highly personalized interaction. Initially available to a select group of users, this feature promises to revolutionize how we interact with AI by enabling GPT
revolutionize, to... I have to call it. I like it though. Let's brand it.
It's not bad. I like the terminology. ChatGPT is going to be able to recall past conversations and tailor responses accordingly. With privacy and safety at the forefront, OpenAI ensures users have full control over what it remembers and the options to navigate interactions incognito.
Yeah.
Which I think if from a publisher standpoint, this is perfect. Because if you're having ChatGPT help you write blogs, it could potentially like remember past blogs that you wrote. And if you're like, it could even potentially be like, wait, maybe we're like touching that subject too many times.
Yeah.
Or maybe we can elaborate based off a past article. Or potentially if you can get the GPT to be configured properly, you could probably even set up backlinks too.
Yeah. And I think, you know, this is the area where the next sort of like big jump, I think one of the things that maybe is slowing the impact in both user adoption of AI right now is sort of this challenge that it has. I think there's one belief that the sort of more general intelligence side. So to break AI down, and I know I've done this once on the show before, so I'll be fast with it. You sort of have right now natural language models that are good at guessing words. So the next word after, if me and Manny are having a conversation, I say, hi, how are you? It might end there, or the next word might be doing, and over a billion enough conversations fed in, it can guess either one. And that's how it's using information to like make answers to questions. So it's not actually, it's kind of dumb. It doesn't really know what it's saying. It's just kind of like spitting out like what it's heard other things say almost. And so even if you could give it a memory to do that, it's just going to be guessing off of its past stuff. And what we've seen is that it's not good at that. So if you've ever had a chat with ChatGPT and you're like, why'd you do that? Remember, I wanted you to like write this without, you know, saying hello at the beginning. And it's like, oh yeah, sorry. Sorry about that. And then it just goes about its business. It's like, it's not that it forgot. It's that it like, it doesn't have enough trained data to say that like, it's not supposed to do that after that. And so the ability to actually give it some sort of context doesn't seem hard. That seems like logic. And I think that if we can have this sort of bridge where it doesn't need to logic and reason, which is the next step for AI, which is if it can do math, and the reason why that's important is you can logic where it's like when someone says don't do something, a don't is a zero, let's say, and a one is a do it. So a don't followed by this segment of words. It's like this segment of words is associated with this segment of words. So don't, they're asking me general context to not provide an answer, not say the word hello at the start of this or something. So that form of reasoning is actually really hard and makes it even more like hungry for computing power. However, I do think that this sort of memory component doesn't have to require that sort of sophistication. And yeah, I think people will be surprised at the improvement if something like this is added in the near term.
Yeah, I'm really excited for this feature. So I use ChatGPT for a lot of things. And I've ran into that exact scenario that you were describing where if you're, you know, several weeks into a conversation where you've been going, you know, back and forth and you tell it to recall something from the previous conversations, like, can't do it.
It's a dart throw. It's like maybe 10% chance. Mm-hmm. You know, if you uploaded a file, it's a little bit better sometimes because it might go back and reference it. But sometimes it's just way off in left field.
Mm-hmm. And it's just, you know, making stuff up as it goes.
Yep.
But sticking with AI news, OpenAI is also introducing watermarking to DALL-E 3 in a partnership with the Coalition for Content provenance, and authenticity, OpenAI is embedding both invisible metadata and visible CR symbol into images to verify their AI-generated origins. Starting now, the ChatGPT website and API with mobile implementation rolling out imminently, these watermarks promise minimal impact on image quality while significantly enhancing the ability to trace content provenance. This move, supported by tech giants like Adobe and Microsoft, is a stride towards differentiating AI-created visuals from those made by humans, addressing growing concerns over digital misinformation. And similarly, jumping straight into some social media news, Meta is set to label AI-generated images on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads, and this decision is spearheaded by Nick Clegg, Meta's president of global affairs, comes as the line between human-made and synthetic content increasingly blurs, raising concerns about authenticity, especially during crucial election periods. Over the next year, Meta will closely monitor how users interact with these labeled images to refine its approach, incorporating visible markers, invisible watermarks, and metadata to AI-generated content to make it easily identifiable.
Yeah, so, and I think we're going to have to be really careful over the next year over, especially when it relates to stuff like this, regarding where we think big tech is headed, because stuff like this, particularly the last part about, is a image real or not? There's so many actors that want to play a role in sort of like U.S. elections. And even if those actors are not as organized or even, frequent as maybe people would imagine, or I think that they exist. I don't know to what degree. Maybe it's significant. But the federal government of the United States is very concerned about, because America is the most powerful country in the world. The amount of wealth, technology, military might, and influence that the country has is significant. And I think the thought that whether imagined or real, I really don't know what that spectrum looks like in terms of how true that is, but it does make for a political hot button issue. And I think the concern over whether or not those things would be infiltrated or used to influence our elections is definitely something that I think big tech is. I think if you were to ask them, like, what is their greatest fear or threat, it is the U.S. federal government. Meta in particular, because they already sort of have like a spotlight on them from the past. I think they're scared to death that the U.S. government will basically point the, SEC, the Federal Communications Commission arm at them or someone at them and really just like obliterate their business if they're not really careful here. So you're going to see a lot of them getting ahead on stuff like this. The AI watermark and, human element of this, as a publisher, I think you can maybe look at it as encouraging, but I would, I'm a glass half full guy most of the time, right? But in this case, I'm like, I would see this not as a positive from the standpoint of, like, it's, I think that this is partially lip service. Saw an ad yesterday, and it was a picture of, I think it was like a spotlight company or something. Had nothing to do with technology, but it said, I think they were trying to sell security spotlights or floodlights. And they said, rarely is a fence enough, or rarely is just a fence enough. And I think the idea was, is like a fence is not going to keep somebody from like breaking right into whatever it is you're protecting. Somehow floodlights would be, I guess. Right. But
lights scare robbers.
Yeah, exactly. And I kind of think of like a watermark in the same way, or any form of like, they said like invisible metadata. It's like no matter how technically sophisticated you might think you can make something, it's just defense, So at best, all it's going to do is keep somebody that's, putting the minimal amount of effort in from, putting something up that's fake and trying to, influence people. But somebody that's actually trying to, be dishonest with an image or show something that's, get people riled up. That's it. won't stop that at all, not even kind of.
Yeah, I agree with that. I do have an interesting thought on this, and I'm not sure what your take is on this, but let's say you're browsing, you know, your favorite social media, Instagram, whatever.
MySpace.
You're on MySpace, you know, you're talking with Tom, and as you're scrolling, you see an image for a company. Let's just call it the Floodlight Company. And on that image, you see a watermark or somewhere labeled like this image was created with AI. Does that make you, A, trust the company less? And B, does that take legitimacy away from the company? Because it's like, why are you using AI for this?
Well, it depends. So that was one thing that I, a point that I think is a good one to make, because I do think that there is this inherent sort of like, and I feel it even within me, and maybe it's maybe more recently media driven, but AI created almost has like a little bit of a negative connotation, mm-hmm. almost like if a product is a generic product, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's like, it's not necessarily bad. It's not necessarily whatever, but you kind of think of it as maybe like lower quality or taking the job of a human in some cases. And I don't think that that's true. I mean, I think I've seen content written by GPT that's better than human content written, images that are amazing and, you know, would have taken a graphic designer, I mean, days to complete, you know, just a decade ago. So it's really incredible. You mentioned the thing about the Floodlight Company. If you're showing me an AI generated photo, you know, I guess that would be one I'd throw back at Facebook, and I'd be like, as the company, if you used AI to edit it and it's, you know, flagging it for that, I'd be like, I just wanted to edit the picture of my product with this, and you're flagging it this way. Because if I see it and I assume that that picture of that product is AI generated, I'm like, well, they're not. Why aren't they showing me a picture of their actual product?
Right. You know, exactly. And then just kind of like in the same light, just trying to like find some sort of like metaphor to kind of equate it to. It's kind of like the idea of if you go to the store and you buy a sweater, and that sweater was made, you know, in a mass production warehouse versus it was handmade.
Yeah.
Which one is better? I mean, it's very subjective to which one is better, because there's, you know, it's a preference thing.
Yeah.
But on one of them, it says handmade. And you're like, okay, this one, someone took the time to put it together. And it's kind of like when you order something online and they give you the stamp of like handmade with love or something like that. Yeah. And you're like, oh, I feel better because a human made this versus this was made on a conveyor belt.
Yeah. I mean, it there is that question. You know, there's certain things, like if your seatbelt was handmade, does that make you feel better?
Does it have a stamp on it that says handmade with love?
No. There's certain things where it's like handmade by a human. I'm like, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Like, you know, if I was going to have an artificial, if I was going to have a pacemaker put in and somebody's like, it's handmade, I'd be like, give me one of the ones that was like manufactured out of mold, like all the other ones.
Definitely, you know? Definitely.
So I see what you're saying. I mean, I think it's a new frontier, and I think some of that's going to be consumer sentiment. I'm sure that there's things that have not happened yet or products that aren't available yet that will maybe define some of these things with greater fidelity for us, because, you know, you think about something like powered by, right? So like that maybe was a meaningless word. I don't know when that started getting used, but I kind of think of it as like a very corporate-y technology word now. You know, it's like powered by T-Mobile. You know what I mean?
You see a lot of things powered by ChatGPT now.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's like, I know that that's owned by a bigger company. So depending on what it is, I might say that's a good thing or it's a bad thing. You know, like I won't buy software if it says powered by Oracle, because it means that Oracle bought it and they're not going to support it anymore. It's just going to like die a slow death.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where it's like different things I think will mean different things to, you know, in context. So some of that's going to be almost impossible to predict.
It'll be interesting to see. We'll keep a close eye as time goes on. But sticking with some social media news, that's also kind of diving into the search market and search engine news. TikTok is introducing a new feature that nudges users to add a search shortcut directly to their device's home screen. Like when you save it onto your screen for iPhone, so it looks kind of like an app.
Yeah, for the longest time, that's what Google wanted people to do with progressive web apps. So it's very... It's kind of it's very rich that that TikTok has found a way to get users to do the thing that Google so badly wanted them to do for the longest time. And publishers too, if you think about it.
But. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And this initiative underscores TikTok's commitment to evolving beyond its roots as an entertainment platform, positioning itself as a key player in the search and discovery space. With 170 million active users in the United States alone and global user base nearing 2 billion, TikTok's latest move aims to cater to the Gen Z demographic, which increasingly relies on the platform for finding information, products, and services. By enhancing its search functionality, already a robust feature in its Chinese version, TikTok is not just chasing after traditional search engines, but redefining how users interact with social media to discover the world around them.
Yeah, so this is so publishers that have maybe been paying attention lightly to this podcast, we've talked about AI and, you know, the direction of big tech and what might be. This is very relevant. This is topical today because the Gen Z and the generation after, they are not searching on YouTube when they're looking for videos. They're searching on TikTok. That they have. TikTok has overtaken YouTube as the dominant search engine for video. Google, it's one of the reasons why Google implemented universal search, where they take video and image and they give you all the results kind of embedded on the search engine landing page, is because they're so worried about this. This is, I mean, even my wife now, I was telling you before the show, we were talking about doing something the other day and she goes, oh, I bet you could find a video on TikTok, a TikTok video really quickly that would show you how to do that. And it's almost like TikTok, she called it a TikTok video as if it's like a brand of video, right? And when you think about it in that context, it's to sort of like reposition this to publishers, it's almost more built for niche content and, or I guess focused content and publishers than you think about something like YouTube, where you search for something and you really don't know what kind of videos you're going to get. On TikTok, there's a brand sort of like, if I'm like, how do I install a TV? I want to see a TikTok video on installing a TV. It's probably going to be something kind of fast, right? This is how I think the platforms have done a good job. It's one thing I think they've done to help publishers reach an audience outside of the sort of general reach that they provide. The reason why that reach is there is because the format matters a lot. And, I have the tendency to write things that are too long, produce videos that are too long, maybe too short. But if the format is sort of defined and I have to fit within it, I will. And if the platform already sort of knows or has attracted users because of that, that format is a winner. And I think by formatting things the way that they have, TikTok is clearly defined like a winner to at least the coming generation. And so if you're at all involved in video, or maybe even, to be honest, search and you're not in video, you should be. You have to pay attention to TikTok. And if you're like, where do I start? I would just start using it. I'd start doing some research on the data and see who's using it and why, and see what segments of your audience might be in there and what they're looking for, because this is a huge opportunity. And I think in general, publishers today that are running websites or YouTube channels, I think that they're behind here, catching up. I think you're going to see a lot of disruption, a lot of new publishers, because the old ones are not adapting quickly here.
Yeah, and I mean, TikTok has been proven to be somewhere where if you want to build an audience quickly, you got to do it there.
Yep.
You can maybe potentially, you know, drive them elsewhere into your other platforms, but that's where people are getting the most.
Yeah, and if you, in the past, that's been the telltale sign of a platform that's still growing quickly. You think about Facebook back in like the late 2000s, early 2010s, you could start a Facebook page up and get something to go viral and have like 1 million followers the next day. And then you'd just be like raking in the traffic. You'd have so much engagement on the platform until, you know, it was really whenever they started monetizing that reach, is kind of that was the sort of peak in terms of their growth. And now the growth is sort of really leveled off for them. And TikTok, it seems to be they're still on that linear growth trajectory. And I think this is the area where you know, the sky is still like blue in front of them.
Definitely. And I think that them having like this feature already be so robust in their Chinese version, it's almost like they had somewhere to A/B test it before they bring it
here. Yeah. I mean, I think that they're so good at using data. Yeah. And they certainly collect a lot of it.
Yeah. Oh, yes, they do. Yes, they do. But sticking with search news, we're kind of taking a look at how a year later, after Microsoft and its Bing platform kind of skyrocketed with all the news of AI last year, thinking that they were going to take more of a market share from Google. It seems like that's not really the case, because Microsoft Bing, however, they have managed to secure a slight increase in market share over the past year, both in the United States and globally, despite the high expectations set by the integration of ChatGPT for search into Bing. Google continues to hold a commanding lead in the market. From February 2023 to January 2024, Bing's U.S. market share edged up from 6.35% to 7.87%, while Google's experienced a small dip. Globally, the story is similar, with Bing making marginal gains against Google's slight decline. This subtle shift raises intriguing questions about the long-term impact of generative AI on search engine competition, Microsoft's advancements, and Google's innovative responses, including the new search generative experience, signal a fierce ongoing rivalry in search technology. Yet as the dust settles, the search market landscape appears largely unchanged, highlighting a challenge of dethroning Google from its dominant position. And I think that this is an important story, going off of what we just talked about with TikTok. If Microsoft, a company who is massive, is not able to really take too much of the commanding lead that Google has, does TikTok fare any different?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I think that, yeah, if you kind of framed it the right way, which is like the juxtaposition of looking at things short term versus long term. It, to me, if you're a publisher and you go, okay, over the next decade, if I was to say I'm going to optimize my business for people that might search for things on TikTok or search for things on Bing, which path is more likely to, you know, lead to success or growth? It's probably TikTok, right? Yet a year ago, I think people were like ready to say, you know, say, is Google going to even be in business tomorrow? You know? That said, I will say this, that 1.5% increase in market share that they got, that's the largest increase, that I'm aware of that they've maybe ever had in this market. So it does signal something, right? Like Bing, I remember maybe, I can't remember how many years ago, but I monitor it every year. And I specifically remember when it was 4.3% of the market. So they've almost doubled it here, let's say, in the last 5 or 6 years. That's pretty significant. If they could stay on that pace, they'd really be onto something. They just have to be slow and steady wins the race. Unfortunately, I think that time span, you know, I don't even know that Google would say that, you know, like search engines will be around, or who knows. But it's just too long of a time period, especially in technology, to say we'll just slow and steady win this. So I don't think that it's a significant piece of information in terms of no one should be changing their business strategies around it. But that being said, 1.5% of the search engine market, let's be clear, if you and I could start a business today that guaranteed all we could do is 1.5% of the search engine market, you and I would be kicking these microphones over and walking out the door, because that is such a huge market and such a competitive one. It's just very hard to penetrate. And before this, I don't know that you could have even said that, you know, before last year, I don't know that you would say that Bing is likely to even grow. I think you would say they may get picked off slowly but surely by some of these private browsers and different things like that. And so I do think that this overall is really good news and encouraging news for Bing. And I don't think that anybody that understands technology would say that it would have even been remotely likely that users would just abandon Google search. I mean, Google search is enough of an incumbent. We've seen technology trends move and think like, you know, think of Clubhouse. Do you remember that during the pandemic?
Yeah.
So Clubhouse was like really hot for a second getting crazy evaluations, and now it's like I don't know anybody that would want to put money into it. But you know, like it's a trend, you know, it lives and dies. But Google search has been around for a long time. It's brand name. And I don't think you were just going to see overnight everybody move to something like Bing. If nothing else, I think this sort of validates that Google is somewhat vulnerable to tech disruption, because you've seen users change their behavior more so than in the past with something like this. But if you're looking for an opportunity, I mean, I think it's not in Bing search. I think that's existed. It's just that opportunity is maybe slightly better. I think the real opportunity is probably AI and TikTok, if you were going to say, like, what's my takeaway from those two pieces of info?
Oh, 100%. And I mean, we'll see where we're at this time next year.
Yeah.
If we can say TikTok made a bigger dent in Google's lead with search, because only time will tell. I feel like although Microsoft is a massive company who's had clout in the tech space for decades, TikTok has such a young user base that's only going to use technology more over the next couple of years. So that could pose as a very big threat to Google.
I think, you know, these two stories combine so many just interesting data points, looking at it now, looking at it a year ago. And like you said, I think looking at it a year into the future, you know, February 2025 sounds like a crazy number to say.
So wild.
But I think looking at sort of those data points again, you'll start to see a trend line. It'll tell us a lot about the direction of video, the importance of video. Like, is this something that's like, I think a lot of people wonder, and people wondered this about mobile, which inclines me to believe that video still has so much room for growth. But video seems to be on this trajectory right now where it's like people wonder, is it at that phase where it's so not saturated, but I guess the adoption is at an inflection point to where things will start to level off. You won't see this crazy growth in video where there's a lot of opportunity. I think it's still a very, very underserved area that's still growing. So I think it's kind of like mobile phones maybe a decade ago where everybody's like, yeah, mobile's here and everybody's using a mobile phone, but everybody really isn't, and they're not using it for everything yet. And that was the thing that a lot of folks missed. And then as it relates to search engines, I think, you know, there's like 10 questions embedded in it. AI, the players, like, what does it look like? How is user behavior changing? User behavior takes a while to change, but at that point we'll be 2 years in, and they usually say 2 to 3 years to change user behavior. So I think we'll have at least some inclination to be able to make a better guess, or want to make a better guess as to what direction that'll be headed in probably in a year. So stay tuned for the episode a year from now.
Yeah, so we'll stay tuned into all the news that's happening, and we want you guys to stay tuned to the Publisher Lab.
We want to thanks everybody. Dang it. I was so clean for having a break, but there it is. That's what happens whenever you know, you get slow. You got to exercise those muscles if you want to keep them strong. And hopefully you guys are exercising your publishing muscles. And if you don't listen to this because you're not a publisher, but you listen to it because you're a fan of information about big tech and AI and the internet, then exercise just generally.
Just in general. Go for a run.
See what I mean? Anyways. All right. Thanks, everybody. We'll catch you next time on the Publisher Lab.